You must be Walter Nebeker.
How did you know that?
It's on the programming you fed into my system. I must say, Walter, you're very good. Very good indeed. I look wonderful.
If you do say so yourself.
You programmed me to be honest. But tell me, why did you call me Automan?
It means that you're the world's first truly automatic man. You can do anything because you're not real.
Oh, but I am. I'm as real as you are, just different. And thanks to you, perfect.
Nobody's perfect, Automan.
That's not true, Walter. You've programmed me to observe other people and do whatever they can do as well as they can do it. Jimmy Connors playing tennis, John Travolta dancing. In fact, on a scale of 1 to 10, think of me as an 11.
I've created a monster.
No, what Walter really created was a wonderful force for good. Automan. That's me.
Welcome, partner. I hear tell you like some geek news. Well, you done come to the right place. This town's what they call a one-horse town, but the one horse has a, well, kind of a funny name. The name of that horse is the Action Room.
Yeah!
Yeehaw!
Yeah!
Rawhide!
Or what about bing-bong-bing? Ricochet Rabbit.
Ricochet Rabbit. We thought we'd do a little Western opener for you action listeners, since this weekend Jonah Hex opened and is apparently
closed.
Bombing.
It's bombing. Apparently it only made $2 million yesterday.
Who's that third voice?
It's Kim
Rogers. Oh, we have Kim Rogers. Woo!
And also, who's...
That was a very vigorous studio audience.
Who's that first voice?
Oh, my goodness. I'm... Well, they like to call me Tony Wolf.
And I'm producer Mike. I have no accent.
He's not going to be an Old West guy. You know, it's a shame, I just want to say about Jonah Hex, because Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray write the Jonah Hex comic books. I've recently started sampling a bunch of them over the last couple of months. They're terrific. They're amazing. They're very Clint Eastwood, Western movie referenced. They're just so good, and it's sad that the movie isn't very good.
Well, the movie was marketed terrible. The trailers were awful. I don't think I saw any commercials for it. You know, it's...
But I mean, is it...
Josh Brolin, I hear, is good, but the script is just bad.
Yeah.
I was going to say, is the movie good and it's just not getting attendance? Or?
I think it's like Wild Wild West meets Fantastic Four 2 or 1.
I mean, Entertainment Weekly busted out a D for it, you know? So, like, they, you know, save those for the pretty bad movies.
But we love you, Jimmy Palmiotti.
So has there been... Because, like, the Wild Wild West, I remember, was a shitty movie. Like... Have they ever done, like, a kind of supernaturally... Like, is this Cowboys
that's
and
good?
Aliens going to be the first that's, like, good, you think?
I bet it will.
Yeah, yeah.
I bet it will.
It's got Jon Favreau behind it,
right.
So...
Yeah. All right.
Anyway.
The movie we all came back, we had to see before this next episode was...
Toy Story 3!
Woo! We are such geeks.
11 years in the making.
Wow.
Amazing.
And actually, I just wanted to say from the Entertainment Weekly article about it, Andy, the boy in the film who owns the toys, it's been 11 years since the last Toy Story film, and Andy has aged in Toy Story 3 exactly 11 years.
And they used the same voice of kid who's done the voice in all three.
Really?
The same guy. Isn't
That's
that
awesome.
Amazing?
He's very good.
They had him, re-audition every time, but clearly, like, they wanted to use him, and he's still doing it.
So his voice dropped? So
yeah, I mean, a little bit. You know, he's 25 now. I would certainly hope
he's
that his
17?
Voice... No. He's 25, so I would certainly hope that his voice had dropped.
So before we share our detailed thoughts, let's just go round robin. Producer Mike, Kim, and myself, one or two words.
Dude, I don't even know why you have to bother. It's obviously amazing.
Yeah.
It not only met my expectations, it exceeded them.
Wow.
And fucking amazing. This is Tony Wolf's patented phrase. Pixar can do no wrong.
And
wrong. Is that your new website, Fucking Amazing?
Fuckingamazing.com. It's going to rival BleedingCool.com.
All right, so I'll just say, you guys can run with it. I'm just going to say I was emotional the whole time, just happy and sad, and just it was just everything. It was... It was awesome. The 3D wasn't necessary, but it was awesome. And one other thing, just as a little thing that they handed out these movie mini mags.
Do that at mine.
Yeah. Which made me a little bit reminiscent of when we got programs as a kid for like Indiana Jones.
The
and
official book of the movie.
And it's so awesome. It's got like cartoons. It's got a little checklist for the toys you can get, which are in the movie.
Oh.
And, a comic book.
A comic book. The whole thing is little games and stuff. Really, really awesome. I love the 3D. It was awesome. These are the types of movies that should be in 3D.
Yeah.
And just overall, it was unbelievable. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah,
okay,
Kim? I mean, I cried for about the last 15, 20 minutes, you know, and not just like tear, like sobbing. And my two friends that I saw it with both crying, you know, it was wonderful. Pixar uses 3D so well. You saw it in Up. They don't do the cheap 3D gags. The 3D just enhances the movie. It's not like, we're going to have things flying out at you. Yeah. And you know.
Thought about that. I mean, also, has it changed since the first one? Like, I haven't looked back at the first one to see if they actually upgraded much.
I don't feel like they did.
Mm. It looks pretty true
too much.
To,
Because their storytelling is just so dynamic inherently, and it always has crazy things, you know, especially with Toy Story. Really wonderful, very moving, definitely towards the end. We don't want to really be too spoiler-heavy or really any substantial spoilers, but, you know, obviously you've seen in trailers, they go to daycare, and it almost becomes like a caper or a heist or an escape or a prison drama.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just
prison
brilliant.
Break.
And we shouldn't say the big thing, but it's very scary, too. Like,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I was like, well, there was, you know, the point where, you know, towards the end, I was like, really? Is this going to happen?
Right.
What's going on?
No,
that's when I started crying.
Seriously, no. And then, I mean, there were so many moments. I mean, I was just so happy to see these characters again.
Yeah.
And it just, like,
so
I don't know,
well
it
done.
Hit every mark. It was, like, amazing.
I mean, all the voice casting was, of course, spot on. I mean, that's one of Pixar's gifts, I feel like, is really finding the voice for the character instead of, what celebrity of the day can we get to voice a character for an animated movie? You know, they're just all perfect. Tom Hanks.
Oh, he's amazing.
Is amazing. Mm-hmm. Tim Allen. I mean, when they turned Buzz Lightyear Spanish. That was absolutely
and
hysterical.
I love they got a different actor to do this.
It almost sounded to me like Antonio Banderas. I don't think it was, but it was very, you know.
My prediction is that they hired some guy who specializes in doing, like, dubbing, dubbing, and they told him to really make it sound really over the top, and it's just brilliant.
Yeah, it was so
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing
so
bad
good.
About it.
I mean, unless it could. Could it be Tim Allen with, like, a voice modulator or
Maybe.
Something? Because it really just sounded like a different voice.
I didn't think about it, but I'm going to say it probably was Tim Allen, too.
No,
you
can't
don't
believe
think
he'd be
Maybe
that
they
fluent.
Did some sort of, like, you know, manipulation.
Right.
We'll have to look.
We'll have to
The accent was too perfect for
right.
Tim Allen, I think.
It was hysterical. I mean, I love that this is the first movie I've been on here that I have, like,
I was going
to
say,
roundabout, loved, have nothing bad
That's true.
To
That's
say.
True.
I have nothing to bitch about with Toy Story.
And that seems to be, I mean, for the most part, I really haven't seen a Pixar movie that's at least they're at least amazing or better. Like,
I mean, for me, the worst in quote marks Pixar movie is Cars,
and
I did revisit. I revisited Cars this week because I tried to rewatch a bunch of the Pixar movies, especially ones I hadn't seen in a long time. And Cars is not as bad as I remembered it. It kind of gets a bad rap, especially that it lost the Oscar to Happy Feet, and it's the only time that Pixar has ever lost the animated film Oscar when they've had one up for
Speaking
it.
Speaking of...
No, Cars and... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Cars and Monsters, Inc. are sometimes considered the potentially weaker ones, but...
I love Monsters, Inc.
Well, good.
I love it.
I'm glad.
And I actually really liked Cars.
I liked Cars a lot, too. I understand that Cars might not have the...
It doesn't have the cuddly aspect, because I'm like, they're Cars.
Well, it's also not as iconic. Like, the other Pixar movies have become almost like modern, legendary,
but
iconic
things. What I loved about Cars was when he would drive just the scenery and
stuff. Oh, the animation in it is
and
amazing.
And Paul Newman lent wonderful gravitas to Cars.
Yes, definitely.
And, like, the script beats in Cars at the end where he has to teach him the lesson, they're still so great.
Oh, no. I mean, and me rewatching it, I found myself crying again because I really can't get through a Pixar movie without sobbing.
They're so smart. I mean, other animated films, like the first Shrek, is okay. It's entertaining and maybe slightly moving at times, but no other animated studio has even approached Pixar's level of quality. They've made, what do you want to say, 11 films.
11.
And
yes.
There has, I don't know any movie studio in history of movies
that has
at
had
all,
such a streak.
That has had that kind of streak. And it's just a level of quality and intelligence that they bring, and a very out-of-the-box kind of creative approach that I think has never been seen before.
Well, and it's like every movie they come out with, everyone's like, this is going to be the one that is going to be the bomb
right.
Pixar,
no
you know?
That,
but everyone's waiting for it to happen, because I remember them saying it a lot with Up last year. They're like, how is this going to connect with audiences?
Right.
The story of an old man, a little boy, how is it going to connect? And then it did.
Well, one thing also is that you definitely have to come early, which Tony unfortunately wasn't able to do, because
the short
was...
Oh, the short's precious.
It's precious, and it's very inventive. I mean, they never did anything like this before, and you know, it, I'll just give a little bit of a indication. There's 2D in it, which is just awesome.
But there's also 3D elements, right?
But I'm just saying it's the first time we've seen, and you're saying they're going to do a 2D animation too, right? I heard Pixar's doing some 2D animation in the future.
I think so. I think they're going to do some that is not CG, like that'll be hand-drawn,
stuff,
whatever.
That's what I mean.
And there were news stories on the internet. They're going to continue to produce Toy Story-themed shorts.
Okay.
Which is great, like little spin-offs for all the different characters.
Bit,
like,
you know.
I want to see the Hedgehog doing his theater.
The Hedgehog was amazing. Kristen Schaal from Flight of the Conchords and the improv world, she was terrific. Although she had a small role, she was with the Triceratops.
Oh, okay.
You
yeah,
know that
see, I would
actor.
Like a whole spin-off with
yeah,
those
definitely. At the end of the
toys.
Movie, at the end of the movie, you want to see more of them.
I wanted
yeah.
to see more of her secret internet dinosaur boyfriend.
Oh,
which
yeah.
she was all embarrassed
about.
They've
got a whole, like, network of, like, probably... Yeah, yeah. You know, toy.com. You
and
know,
Barbie
find your
and Ken. And
well, Barbie and Ken. It was Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
Keaton.
How
oh, Ken.
Hilarious oh. and gay was he?
Oh, my God. The fashion show. I'm not spoiling anything.
Oh, my
but,
gosh.
You know.
And his ascot. You know, it's just...
Lots of ascot jokes.
Well done. Yeah.
It was
well
amazing.
Done.
Awesome. All right. So let's...
And a very moving... I think they've said they could theoretically do a 4, but they said they really feel they brought the story to an appropriate
really
close.
I really think that... I mean... They said maybe we shouldn't do a 3 right. or whatever, but really they left the characters in a good place. I
Definitely.
Don't want them to ruin the franchise
right.
just, you know, to maybe get the money out of it
right,
or anything
right.
like that, which I don't think Pixar would do because they have a little bit more integrity.
And even
than
if
that.
They if they ever do anything new, it's going to be great anyway, so
yeah.
I'll pay the money. So.
Yeah, totally.
All right.
So we should probably keep going because we got a long show. Our next thing that we're going to go right into, and then the nerd news after that, is our interview with Richard Gale, who is the director of The Horribly Slow Murderer with the Extremely Inefficient Weapon, which is an amazing, huge YouTube
clip. You may
clip.
Have seen it. It's about a guy beating someone to death with a spoon
no,
around
I
the world.
Haven't
he haunts
seen
him.
That.
He's like a demon.
All right.
Beats this guy with a spoon.
We're going to show Kim during the break this, or during the interview.
All right.
And again, Kim, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This was an amazing experience for us to all see this movie. This is the first time we've
yes,
all seen the
we've
movie.
We've all three seen a movie.
And we all loved it.
Yes.
I mean, if you don't love Toy Story, there's something wrong with you.
Definitely.
And you're a little dead inside if you don't.
You're
and
a
if you don't
deviant.
Go home and, like, all I wanted to do was go home and, like, find my old toys and give them a cuddle. I mean, really, like.
lots of hugging.
I mean, I have, like, a stuffed dog at home in Nashville that I, like, wanted to go home and, like, snuggle and be like, oh,
aww.
Toy, I loved you.
All right, you can snuggle us, Kim.
Okay. I will.
We love you, Toys.
All right, so let's go back, or let's continue with the interview. Or let's go to the interview.
Let's go on back to the interview.
Some murders take seconds. Others take minutes. Some murders take hours. This murder takes years.
This is Mike for the Action Room, and on the phone with me is Richard Gale, the director of The Horribly Slow Murderer with the Extremely Inefficient Weapon, which is a 10-minute trailer for a fictitious horror film that has been viewed over 5 million times on YouTube. How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing great. Good to hear from you.
Now, when my friend told me about your film and said it's basically a 10-minute trailer that just gets funnier and funnier, I didn't think it was possible, but when I saw it, I was totally entertained and laughing the entire way through it, and it actually does get funnier and funnier, which is a huge accomplishment, especially since most YouTube clips get boring after 30 seconds.
Right.
Tell us exactly what this trailer is about and how you came up with the idea.
Well, basically, The Horribly Slow Murder with the Extremely Inefficient Weapon is a faux movie trailer, 10 minutes long, for a movie that is allegedly over 9 hours long. And the idea came from many, many years ago. I had wanted to do a little comedy short for something called The Horribly Slow Murderer with the Inefficient Weapon. It was only going to be like a 60-second thing. I never made it, and was just looking for some kind of comedy short to do. I had made a horror short, which is sort of has a bit of comedy in it, but called Criticized, which played the festival circuit and did well. And I wanted to do something new, but whereas Criticized was like 90% horror, 10% comedy, I wanted to do something that was more like 90% comedy and 10% horror, and so that's what Horribly Slow Murderer is. And I like the idea of doing something that was a really ridiculous concept, but played by the actors and treated, you know, deadly serious. Like, it's this very serious, intense, epic thriller.
It looks like a lot of effort went, you know, into making this, and it appears as if it was filmed all over the world, although I'm assuming
yeah.
green screen. How much did it cost, and how long did it take to make?
Well, you know, the exact number it has been stated in some places that it was like $600, and my out-of-pocket was probably a couple thousand when all was said and done, and then I spent a lot more just taking it to film festivals. But if you calculate in the labor of all the people who worked on it for free, including myself and the actors and the composer and the makeup artist, who are all friends of mine, it actually would probably come somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000. But again, this is one of those labors of love where everyone worked on it for free and just liked the idea of it. And it actually had a ridiculous amount of shooting days for what turned out to be a 10-minute short film. We actually shot for 22 days of filming. But, you know, part of that, it became a big challenge once we started shooting it, because I realized that, you know, to keep it true to a movie trailer feel, like I really wanted it to have that authentic movie trailer feel, those things are cut so quickly. And so to be true to the form, I would have these scenes where we would actually spend, like there's a scene where the victim of this horribly slow murderer, whose name is Jack Cucciaio, is going to see his doctor, and he's trying to convince his doctor that something's happening to him, that he's being attacked by this murderer, and no one really believes him. And we actually shot for like half a day in this doctor's office set, to shot basically an entire scene with him and the doctor, and of course, because it's a movie trailer, we only ended up using about 4 seconds of it.
Over 12 years in the making. Filmed on 5 continents. With a running time of over 9 hours.
Now, you talked about, you know, the balance between comedy and horror, and I do tend to think that the best horror movies have comedy in them. Are you looking to do more straightforward horror movies, or do you want to do comedy or a mix of both?
Well, you know, if you see Criticized, which is the story of a prominent film critic who gets abducted by a mentally unstable filmmaker after ripping apart his new horror film in a review. And not autobiographical, it's just kind of a fun tale of revenge.
I noticed it's basically, as if we can say this, he tortures him with a paperclip. Is that?
Yeah.
Now, what is your
he does.
What's your fascination with murderers using seemingly harmless everyday objects like paperclips or spoons?
Well, yeah, it's kind of interesting the way it seems that I've become focused on these things. I guess I'm tickled by I was tickled by the idea of using a completely innocuous object that is something that we see every day and is so ordinary in a way that's horrifying, and to actually make it horrifying. And with the help of some super close-up diopter lenses, there's one shot in Criticized where the actual point of an actual small paperclip looks like a gigantic steel beam coming at you. And the poor critic is about to get it in the eye. It was something that I think I might have been inspired a little bit by the original Evil Dead, which I saw when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And there's a quick shot in that where a demon slams a number two pencil into Ash's ankle. Or it might not be Ash's, but someone's one of the characters gets it in the ankle with a number two pencil. And it's such a horrific moment because we all, you know, just recognize the Ticonderoga number two pencil. And so there's that kind of stuck with me, something about using a very ordinary object in horror in that way. It becomes actually more horrific than if it was a knife or something.
Now, having a YouTube success, you know, what is that like? And does Hollywood knock down your door asking you to, like, reboot the Hostel series or something? Like, what happened?
Speaking of torture, yeah, it's kind of crazy to know that there are more people watching your film every day than have watched it in all of the festivals you spent the last year of your life taking it to. You had asked me about, you know, did Hollywood come knocking? And in fact, they did. I got contacted by a couple of different companies, both of which have major studio deals, and both of which had, one of which had heard about me through a festival director, and another one, the other company just found out about Horribly Slow when it was doing the whole viral spread on the internet, and just they called me up out of the blue and asked if I would come and meet with them. And so there's some very promising things cooking now in terms of potential feature film projects for me as a result of all this attention.
Okay, yeah. Did you want to, like, plug your sites, or how can we find your stuff and exactly the website?
Well, I would just say go to YouTube, and you can subscribe to Richard Gale Films on YouTube, and it's Richard Gale, G-A-L-E. And then I'm also on Facebook at Richard Gale Films. And those are really the two best places to find all the latest info of what's going on.
Awesome. Okay, this is Mike for The Action Woman. I've been talking with Richard Gale, the director of The Horribly Slow Murderer with the Extremely Inefficient Weapon, which you can watch on YouTube, and I insist you do because it's hysterical. Thanks for joining me in The Action Room, Richard.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Perhaps the most relentless murder in the history of cinema.
All right, action fans, you are back, and now it's time for
Nerd News.
So this is your new low-key voice?
Yeah, Tony Wolf decided to kick it down a notch or two, yeah.
You felt you were a little too up a notch?
Well, I was a little hyper, but maybe that's the charm of Tony Wolf in the Action Room, is that he's always hyper.
We expect that hyperness. I can't get used to this. You got to go
all
back.
All right. So now it's time for the nerd news. Did we just play the thingy or
we
no?
We did.
Okay,
weren't
awesome.
You here?
I love it. I'm having mental lapses. All right, so in the world of the nerd news, we had three items in the past day or two. First of all, there was the unveiling via Rich Johnston's BleedingCool.com site of one of his spies, one of his correspondents, snapped a photo from the Warner Brothers lot, the first image of Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern. It's a poster, but it's more of like a painting of what he will look like, but a realistic painting.
Well, also, first of all, now this was just for like the UK or something, or was this for everywhere?
This was on the Warner Brothers lot.
Oh, on the Warner Brothers lot. Okay.
There's nothing international about this.
And this is, but what now? What is the purpose of being on the lot? Just for the people that are there, or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the movie world, they come out with little promo things that only get seen by Warner executives and Warner staff.
So the public can't see this from driving around or anything?
I don't think so. No, I think it's like inside the fortress.
Yeah,
the walls of the lot.
Because when you told me about it, I was expecting like a photograph of Ryan Reynolds in the costume.
Right,
but yeah, this is more painted. So, I mean,
it's like a realistic painting. It looks like, you know, I mean, basically all we see, action fans, you'll see it on BleedingCool.com. It's his face with the Green Lantern mask, the way they'll do it in the film, and his fist with the ring.
Now, what do you think as far as, you know, the adaptation from the comic book, his look?
Well, I mean, all we have is really the face. I think the mask looks right on. Essentially,
because you were mentioning the costume is going to be like this glowy energy thing.
Well, basically, they announced that the costume will be all CGI, pretty much, because for Green Lantern, his ring actually makes
the costume. The costume is like energy. It's Green Lantern energy. But I'm predicting, of course, all we saw is just the face and the mask, but I'm predicting it'll be CGI that looks somewhat realistic. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be this glowy, totally neon thing. It's got to look realistic enough for people to take it seriously. It may have like a vaguely simulated leather effect. So in this case, with this one image, all we saw is the face mask. Now, what's interesting about Green Lantern's mask...
Because the face mask doesn't look like an energy thing. It just looks like a mask.
No, but that's what I mean. I think it's I think the costume is not necessarily going to look like an energy thing.
Right.
But the idea is, the conceit is, you, the audience, are asked to believe that his ring creates the costume.
Right, right, right.
And therefore it can magically... You know,
like,
remove it.
Do you remember Auto Man?
Yes.
Where he had like this cursor, kind of like, kind of inspired by Tron, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
And the cursor would make his cars and his helicopters,
right,
you know, out of nothing, and it
yeah.
was pretty cool. All right, the next thing that we didn't talk in the last episode about that was awesome was the international trailer, what's considered the international trailer for the Scott Pilgrim movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Looks amazing.
Totally amazing.
And it is actually different and better, I think, than the ones we've previously seen.
Yeah, well, you were commenting that you found the editing to just be tighter and different and better.
Which, again, I don't know if that's like a European thing, but like, definitely, I mean, in terms of like the beats they hit with the music and
right.
the punches, it just was more intense. It was
yeah.
the intensity that I kind of wanted in those earlier trailers, mm-hmm. and they actually had it in this new one. Plus the fact that they, you know, did sequences that they wouldn't have done in the American versions, which was like him peeing
right.
and the boob, you hit my
the
boobs
girl
and stuff
you.
Like that.
I was curious, though, do you really think the American, you know, MPAA or the censors, do you really think they wouldn't allow a pee sequence or someone saying you punched my boob?
Sometimes.
I mean, that's so tame by today's standards.
It's tame in the movie, but I think when they, for the
as
broad mass, when they're trying to sell
yeah.
it, yeah,
yeah,
they don't want, ew, pee, you know what I mean? But like, European audiences don't give a shit about that.
We also saw a little bit more in the international trailer of Scott Pilgrim of Brandon Routh.
He is
the
former Superman. Funny. Now,
yeah.
he was funny in that, but you said it was a different kind of funny in the comic, right?
Well, I mean, in the comic, that
What's
character...
What's his character? Dude,
you know, I honestly am not
okay.
even sure.
He's
about
one
him.
Of the seven boyfriends, ex-boyfriends.
Yeah, he's not the vegan, or he might be the vegan guy. One of her ex-boyfriends, he goes, I became a vegan. And he goes, I went to the vegan training academy. And like in the Scott Pilgrim world, when you go vegan, you get superpowers.
Right, right, right.
And it's almost like becoming a Jedi or becoming a Buddhist monk who then gets superpowers.
It's like the seventh level in the Tom Cruise religion. What is,
yes,
what
yes,
is it?
In Scientology.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if the joke is that if you break your vegan-ness and you eat meat,
mm-hmm.
the powers go
That's
away.
Awesome.
Or
yeah.
you know, you get in trouble with the vegan academy. So, Brandon Routh's character in the...
Who was the guy who played Superman in the last Superman, by
yeah,
the way.
So forgettable
yeah,
that
right.
No one really... his character is more of the dumb, lughead, tough guy. And he has a sequence in the comic. He has a sequence where he's like, tell the cleaning lady to, you know, pick you up. And Scott
right,
Pilgrim
right.
is like, wait, what? And he's like, because you'll be dust.
Right.
You know, and then Scott Pilgrim's like, I don't get it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
and he has a whole explanation.
Because I'll pulverize you.
Because I'll be pulverizing
be dust,
you.
Which
and
is in the trailer. Yeah.
I know, but in the trailer, Routh delivers it like the character is so confident and thinks what he's saying is so cool and
right,
so
right,
badass.
Right.
But I kind of liked it more in the book. It reads like, he's trying to be badass, but he's so dumb that he can't even, like, his having to explain it kind of
right,
takes
right.
the wind out of his sails. And the reason I felt that might not be the best portrayal is because you already have a badass character who thinks everything he says is cool and who's very dumb, but approaches it aggressively in the Chris Evans
right,
evil
right.
ex-boyfriend.
He does seem
Of course, we've only seen two lines.
Exactly.
So how can I really
And he
say
does
it?
Seem dumber, and that hairdo, that blonde hairdo
yeah,
that he has
yeah,
is
yeah.
hysterical.
It's like that frosted...
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah. So anyway, and the last
I
thing...
I just don't think Brandon Routh is that good an actor also. I mean, we saw Superman Returns. I just don't think he's that good an actor. Hopefully he's funnier than he is better at... Hopefully he's better at comedy. Hopefully he's more good at comedy than he is at being Superman.
I have to say...
More
and,
good.
And maybe it's more for the person that he was doing the scenes with, and I forget who that was, but in the porno movie, the Kevin Smith porno movie, whatever that was called, Zack and Miri,
yeah.
he has one of the funniest characters in that movie.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and he plays like a gay guy, and it's hysterical.
Right. He seems very gay in real life. I kind of think he's gay. In fact, when Superman Returns came out, there was kind of a hidden journalism story that no one really carried that... That he was gay, and the studio was trying to make that keep that silenced because how, you know, some of America might react weirdly.
But now we're not saying he is gay. We do not know that he's gay.
I kind of think he's gay, but my gaydar goes off with him. But
just for legal purposes, we don't know.
I just
know
want him to be good. That's all I care about. Just be a good actor and be funny.
All right,
and don't be Superman again.
And the last thing.
Not that Superman can't be gay, but I want a gay actor who could play very straight and be awesome.
All
right. Or a non-gay actor. Whatever. I like gays. I have no problem with gays.
Not that Brandon Rolfe is gay, but
not that anything's wrong with it.
All right. So the last thing was just a ridiculous news that Sam Raimi will direct the prequel to The Wizard of Oz, as if
we
there
thought,
needs to be a prequel.
Yeah,
to
we
the
thought
Wizard
he
of Oz.
Would know better. Or we thought
I
he would. We thought he would turn this down.
The only thing that might be the good news about it is that it's not a remake of The Wizard of Oz. It's just a prequel.
Yeah.
So if
next
it was
thing
remake,
you know, they'll make a shot for shot remake of The Wizard of Oz
by Gus Van Sant, who
by
did
Gus
the Psycho.
Van
But,
I just feel like, why? Why?
No, it's totally ludicrous. But again, it will be in 3D. Everybody's going to see it. And it is Sam Raimi. And because it's Sam Raimi, it could be good. But it's like, yeah, why do it? I don't know. It's,
you know, the only successful prequel to come out is not even a movie. It's a Broadway show called Wicked, which
right.
just happens to be about The Wizard of Oz. But
and I heard that it will sync up to The Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh yes, when you start.
That was my joke.
put the record needle on.
Have you ever actually done that with
no,
the Pink Floyd album?
It.
Yeah, I got to do it. I mean, never.
I've read extensively about it years ago. I read articles about it. You know, it does seem like it lines up in a cool way.
Supposedly,
but.
it's totally coincidental though. They
of
didn't
course.
Do it on purpose.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, Dark Side of the Moon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, I guess that's it.
I mean, here's another topic I just want to address.
It's not it. Okay, go ahead.
Has there ever been a great prequel that we can think of?
Unless,
in general, because I've started to embrace the notion that all prequels are inherently unnecessary.
Unless you like the Star Wars prequels, no. They're all shitty. I can't
imagine
I can't
anybody think of any good prequels.
The only reason I think this Wizard
like in any genre.
No, I agree. No, I think the
I know there was that Hannibal, you know, prequel to Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, I can't remember. One of them I kind of liked, but I don't know if it was the prequel.
Not Red Dragon. What Red Dragon? But that got made before Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah,
Red
that
Dragon.
Was great. And yeah. that's not even so much a prequel. It was a book. So,
yes,
yeah.
exactly.
The Wizard of Oz thing might be cool just in terms of it's so removed now from the original movie that
yeah.
it's almost like it's separate idea. You know what I mean?
Well, there are like six Oz novels or five Oz novels by the original writer, L. Frank Baum, and then later authors took over. I know Marvel, there has been some comic book adaptations of The Wizard of Oz kind of stuff, and I think Marvel has adapted some of the other books.
Yeah, isn't there some new Oz book by
yeah,
Marvel?
Yeah, yeah, Eric Shanower writes it, and a guy named...
I like the art.
Is it Scotty Young that draws it? I think so.
Something like that.
But I just want to throw out one more thing, too. On the notion of prequels that we were talking about and reflecting on recently, here's what I think is the first hint... The first seeds of this prequel mentality that has swept Hollywood, it is in the third Indiana Jones movie, which is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. In that teaser segment before the opening title sequence, you see River Phoenix as the young Indiana Jones,
mm-hmm.
and he's on top of the train, and you find out how he gets his hat, how he gets his bullwhip. Is it how he gets the jacket, too? Or no, I think he already had the jacket. But I think that, at the time, audiences were like, this is cool, this is how he gets these iconic things. But I think ever since then, and of course that was Lucas, too, but it was Spielberg, I can't think of anything else.
And I know you weren't, but I was a fan of young Indiana Jones.
Well, it was entertaining, but it didn't do well. I think it's only talked about after the fact.
Well,
when it was airing, no one really watched it.
I loved it.
You watched it.
And
I hear it did get some kids more into history.
Right.
I did hear that.
Well, there was supposedly...
And Catherine Zeta-Jones, one of her early stage, one of her early film roles or TV roles was in Young Indiana Jones.
Well, supposedly my aunt actually worked at Lucasfilm on documentary. She worked at Skywalker Ranch doing documentaries related to the DVD for Young Indiana Jones
wow.
because of all the historical characters and, you know, that he meets. And then
right.
they did a whole documentary on the historical character. It's
wow.
kind of interesting.
And Harrison Ford showed up in the very final episode, I think, of Young Indiana
Jones.
Well,
I like how
as old Indy, probably as old as he is actually now.
Well, that's the thing. They have him in modern, which was, when was it? It came out in the 90s or something. It was a modern Indiana Jones talking about his young childhood.
Yeah, he was old Indy.
So he
yeah.
was an old Indy. But that was throughout every episode. He would, you know, at the beginning of the episode, he'd talk about him.
But it
as
wouldn't
young.
Always be Harrison Ford.
I don't think. Yeah, I didn't.
There was
I never
only
heard
one
of,
episode where he really actually showed up.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah,
yeah. But I just like that concept of him going
right,
back and stuff.
Right.
But anyway.
So anyway, I guess that's it for the nerd news.
So, and that's it for the show.
All right.
Now, the next episode, an assistant editor for Marvel, Sana Amanat, is going to be live in the studios, and so that should be cool.
Awesome.
I'm going to actually try to show her my work and try to get a job.
Okay, very cool. Do a little impromptu portfolio review. All right, so we'll see you next time on The Action Room.